Welcome to Wistful Thinking, the podcast where we invite a guest to revisit pop culture from their childhood. I'm Jordan Poland Clark, and with me is my co-host, Kara Gail O'Regan.
Hi.
And our very special guest, Joey Lewandowski.
Hi.
So Joey really quickly actually volunteered to be our first guest on this podcast. And Joey wanted to watch the movie Casper from 1995, starring Christina Ricci, Bill Pullman, and Devon Sawa. Although he's only in the movie for 1 second, I feel like it's really important that he was in this movie, which we can talk about later. But Joey, why? It seemed really easy for you to choose this. Why?
I don't remember who I was talking to, but like within a week before of you saying this idea to me, I was talking to somebody else about Casper, and I was like, I want to rewatch Casper because I haven't seen it in forever, and I wasn't sure if it was going to be good or not, because this is a movie that when I was little, but also like doing the math, I wasn't that little, because when this came out in theaters, it was 95, so it was probably on video either 95 or 96, so I was 7 or 8 probably, so I guess I was little, but not like, I remember being younger, but whatever. This is a movie that for some reason we never bought, but our grocery store had a video rental spot and you could rent a video for $1 for a night. And we rented this, I don't know, 30 times. Like we spent more money on renting it than we would have spent on buying it. I don't know why we did that, but I guess it was just like, oh, we have to watch this tonight because we paid $1 for it, as opposed to just owning a VHS and then, you know, maybe never watching it. I don't know. But I loved this movie when I was little. I watched it so, so many times. It was like this and Richie Rich and maybe one or two others that I just watched a lot of.
This explains and so much.
It also really kind of explains my lifelong crush on Christina Ricci, mm-hmm. I think. But yeah, it's I think the big thing, and I'm just guessing here, that when you do this half of the podcast, I feel like people are going to be afraid to go back and revisit things, because I've also realized in recent films, like last year, my favorite movie was American Honey, and I only saw it once last year, and I realized I'm afraid to rewatch things I love because I'm worried that I'm not going to love them as much.
I think that can be especially true about something that you loved as a child.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. That was made for children. And I think we'll get into this a little bit more as we start talking about the movie, but there's a lot of stuff that doesn't hold up when they make something for kids.
True.
The plot can be pretty loose. It can go off the rails. And as a kid, you kind of don't really pick up on that kind of thing, and you don't care. And going back to watch it again, you're like, wait a second. So, Kara, had you seen this movie before?
Yeah, I definitely saw it as a kid, but hadn't really seen it since. And I don't think that I would say that I, like, loved it as a child, but I've always been kind of spooky and weird. So, like, aesthetically, it appealed to me. But it wasn't something that, like, stood out as a important movie from my childhood.
I actually went through what things that both of you just said when I watched. I had seen this as a child. I really didn't remember very much of it when I sat down to watch it again. I really could only remember the end part. So Kara, I kind of felt like you when I started, but once mm-hmm. I started watching it, like, I realized how important Christina Ricci was to my childhood.
Same. Hard same.
I had no idea that I felt that way. Like, she was so important.
Yeah. Well, like Joey, I also have had a lifelong crush on Christina Ricci.
Haven't we all?
That's what I thought when Joey said that. I was going to be like, well, we all do. But I think mine came more from like, she wasn't in Beetlejuice. That was Winona Ryder. What was the other spooky movie that she was in?
Addams Family?
Yes. Yes, Christina Ricci as Wednesday Addams in The Addams Family explains so much about me and, like, my life, especially the second one.
I think she was, like, the first, like, girl, she was still a girl then, that I ever watched in something and was like, oh, that could be me.
Yeah.
Like, I never identified with anybody. Like, you know, she was, like, a little bit older than me, But she kind of looked, she wasn't blonde. She's super pretty, but not like traditional looking.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like cool in everything that she's in. She looks a little bit goth. She's a little bit dark. She's super real. Because the other movie that she was in 1995 was Now and Then,
which
was another movie that I just loved.
Good.
And I feel like, so I was nine in 1995, and I feel like that's when you kind of start to be able to, like, in a way, see how you might fit into the world, almost. Mm-hmm. And, like, somehow, apparently, I had no idea about any of this, but she helped me do that, I feel like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. Joey, you probably just thought she was, like, a cute girl. It's probably different if you're a guy watching this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember really having a... I don't know, because we talked about recently... What were we... Oh, it was on Zack Attack when we did the 17 Again episode. I think my real first crush in a movie was Michelle Trachtenberg and Harriet the Spy, because I remember that vividly. Like, oh, this girl's really cute. I think... I unknowingly had a crush on Christina Ricci, but like watching her in this movie, like she's just so adorable and cute and likable. Like how old is she in this movie? Like 13 maybe?
Probably, yeah, like 12 or 13.
That sounds right.
Because she was older than me. I don't know. I honestly don't remember why I loved this movie so much when I was little. I just remember that I watched it all the time. And I feel like that's kind of weird. Like I don't remember, I remembered so much of this. Like I think like you were saying, Jordan, I couldn't have told you what the movie was, like, about or really what happened in it, but every, like, as scenes happened, I was like, oh, I remember that, I remember this, I remember that. But what was also weird was that I definitely did not remember the Ghostbusters reference or Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, all these, like, references that I didn't have in my head yet. Or who else is it? Rodney Dangerfield's in here, and
Mel Gibson's in it. Clint Eastwood. Dan Aykroyd's in it. It's amazing.
I feel like you're overselling these cameos a little bit. Like they're
I mean they're on screen for 2 seconds, but they're all people that like I didn't know who they were then, but I can. That's definitely the kind of thing. I guess maybe similarly like to possibly to Pixar today when you have like a very famous notable voice. And adults are going to recognize it, but kids just see it as, like, a fish mm-hmm. in Finding Nemo or something.
And even the priest at the beginning of the movie was, like, a character that the comedian who played him had, like, cooked up in the 70s and had been on Saturday Night Live with and, like, a bunch of other stuff that, like, I definitely didn't recognize as a child, but now do slightly more, but because... I'm not old enough. I still don't exactly understand where it came from.
That's what I knew he must have been someone just because of the way they treated him in the movie, but I didn't get the reference because even like that SNL character was before my time, but I had to Google that because I knew he had to be somebody. But I just think it's crazy that they got all those actors to be in the movie for like 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg was supposed to be in it, and he wasn't.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But so I feel like they were trying to do the thing that Pixar is really good at now, where they make a kids movie and also put enough references in for adults that it's watchable for adults. I think this missed the boat on most of that. Although, like, I was entertained, but I was entertained by the same stuff that, like, kids are entertained by. Like, I laughed when he tied all their shoelaces together and they fell down. Like, that was funny. But I don't know. Joey, how did you experience this movie as an adult?
I liked it. I think this is... What I was worried about was that I wasn't going to like it or I was going to, you know... it was going to irritate me or something, but I enjoyed it. I was also trying to think if I had never seen it before and I watch it today, what I would think of it. And I don't think I would like it, but there is so much nostalgia built into this. And even the fact that the end of the movie, they're just like a party ends. Everybody leaves like, well, that's it. And like the movie ends, like the credits roll. I was totally okay with that. Like you were saying earlier that, you know, as a kid, you don't have this sense of what a plot means or how a plot should wrap up. Like, I was just like, oh, that's a happy ending. Like, everybody gets what they want, and we're all good now. And so even though the ending is kind of abrupt, I still liked it here because I liked it when I was little. So this held up pretty much in every way from when I was little, which is, I think it's kind of the best rewatch that I could have hoped for. Because I know it's not the best movie, but there's nothing about it that, like, bothered me. And even at the what I think is kind of helpful is that the CGI of Casper and the three ghosts, like, it's not meant to be realistic. And so because it looks cartoony, it holds up better than if they tried to make, like, realistic-looking ghosts. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Although they did try... So I disagree with you a little bit in that there were a couple of things that happened in this movie that I was like, whoa, 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 what? Like, I couldn't, like... So I was, like, pretty on board for most of it. And then there's this part where the... What's the bad woman? What's her name? Starts with a C, for sure.
Kerrigan Crittenden?
Yeah.
All right, so Kerrigan decides sometime in the middle of the movie that she's going to kill herself. She has this whole plan. Whatever. It makes sense in the movie. It doesn't matter why.
Well, because she wants to get the safe.
Yeah.
That there's a locked safe, and the only way that you can get in there is if you're a ghost and you're able to pull it out. Obviously.
Obviously, right. So she decides to kill herself, and but then she dies by accident, which was really shocking the way she died. Like, she crashes her car and then falls out of her car down a mountain and then comes back as a ghost. Like, I thought that was so shocking. So she comes back as a ghost. And when she comes back as a ghost, she looks like a person who's, like, transparent. Like, they did try to make her look like a person, which doesn't bother me that much, but I did feel like was not consistent with how they presented the other ghosts, which I think is weird.
Yeah, the character design was definitely not consistent there.
And then Bill Pullman, who plays Christina Ricci's dad, what's his name in the movie? I can't remember names.
His name is Dr. James Harvey.
All right, so Dr. James Harvey gets drunk and accidentally dies right after Kerrigan dies. Like, very suddenly, they just kill him. That's one of those things where as a kid, you, like, are totally accepting of it. But watching it now, again, I was like, wait, what? He just died? You just killed him? And so when he comes back too, he also still looks like a person.
Yeah, those ghosts don't hold up as well. But I was just saying, like, the main ghosts, like Casper and then Stinky and Fatso and the other one that I don't remember, they look okay. And they're in it way more than the other ones, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And this is the first film to have a fully CGI character in a leading role.
Oh, look at that.
And I think they did a really good job. Like, I feel like they could have tried to do stuff maybe that they weren't quite ready for.
Mm-hmm.
And they really didn't. They really, like, knew what would look good, and it looks good. I have to say, like, as the writing was kind of whatever, you know, it's a kid's movie, but, like, the acting is really good. Like, Christina Ricci and Bill Pullman are really good at acting against nothing.
Yeah, definitely. This is another little tidbit that I think really makes a lot of sense about Joey and how your life has shaken out, which is that J.J. Abrams actually did an uncredited rewrite of the script.
Oh,
so between the, like, CGI and the J.J. Abrams, like, this really does explain a lot.
this is a prequel to Lost.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
You know what? This is completely separate. You know what I did not realize until just now is that the guy who directed this movie, Brad Silberling, directed another movie that's close to mine and Jordan's heart, City of Angels, starring Nicolas Cage.
He sure did.
So this guy would go on, I don't know if it's his next film or, like, very shortly thereafter, but he would go on to direct the movie that Cage did right after his action trilogy. So to have this wonderful movie that I loved into that movie, which I think standing on its own would be okay-ish. I mean, there are problems, and you can listen to our Cage Club review of that, our podcast of that. But it's weird that I think maybe the only two movies that I've seen him do were a couple years apart. So good 90s for me, Brad Silberling.
I think this movie is good 90s in general. Like everything, there are a lot of things in this that I like felt fond about from the 90s that showed up again. Like Ben Stein was in it. Like he was in like every movie in the 90s being like a boring guy.
So did either of you get the sense that the little bratty girl at school like was somebody? Because I don't think she really went on to do anything.
I actually wrote in my notes that she must be, and I meant to look her up, and I totally forgot.
Because her picture on IMDb is basically her at that age. So I don't think that she's still working. I think she was in a bunch of stuff, but nothing big. Because she's not a huge part of this movie, but I do remember her from when I was watching this when I was little. She has this presence, and I guess it's kind of one note if she can't do anything else, but she's in the role of like school bully or like the queen of the school or whatever. I think she's good in it.
Yeah, I think all the kid actors are pretty good in this. Can we talk about Devon Sawa now? Is it time?
In his role as Casper on screen?
Yeah, so Devon Sawa is in this movie for like 4 minutes.
Well, he plays like a live Casper, right?
Right. So at the end of the movie, Casper gets to be alive for like until 10 p.m. I don't know what time he starts being alive, but the ghost mom.
Like
we didn't talk about the ghost. Really, yeah. It feels like it's like 9:50. So in this movie, the reason that Bill Pullman and Christina Ricci are in this big haunted house to begin with is because Bill Pullman says that he can talk to ghosts and like help them cross over to the other side. But we get the impression that really he's just like sad that his wife died and he's like looking all over for his wife. So his wife, Christina Ricci's mom, shows up at the end of the movie. She floats in, and she's not a ghost. She's an angel.
Again, totally inconsistent.
This movie, I thought, did a pretty good job of like following its own rules for like about a half hour, and then it was like all out the window. So she floats in and tells Bill Pullman that it's okay and everything's gonna be fine, and she lets Casper be a boy again for 10 minutes. And so this is all during a big party at the Haunted Mansion. So Devon Sawa goes downstairs and Christina Ricci's all sad and alone because everyone's having fun at the party without her, and he asks her to dance, and they dance together. And he says, "Can I keep you?" Which is like actually the only part of this movie that I remembered before it started. and then he floats away again, and he's gone. But like,
well, they don't really dance; they like float dance.
That's right. He makes her
and
float.
And no one
they float
notices.
Together, except her. She notices, and she's kind of freaked out.
But it's also important because Ghost Casper asks, "Can I keep you?" earlier when she's like, and that's the saddest scene in the movie when she's like asleep and he gives her a little ghost kiss and she says, "Casper, close the window, it's cold." And it's just like your heart breaks because it's Casper just wants, like, what does Casper want? What is his unfinished business?
I think his unfinished business is just like his life because he was a child. Which is actually, interestingly, this Casper movie came out of a long history of like Casper comics and cartoons. And in all of those, like dating back to like the late 30s, it was always explained that he was a ghost because his parents were ghosts when they had him.
What?
Yeah, to skirt around the uncomfortable topic of child death, basically. But they actually return to that in this movie, and they do address the subject of his death, that he was outside sledding until way after dark, and then he got pneumonia, and then he died. So because he died as a child, I think that's probably, like, his unfinished business is the rest of his life, or love, or, you know, one of those, like, grand things.
Well, he also says, like, he explains all that to Christina Ricci, and he says that he hung around because of his dad. Mm. Like, so obviously when he died, his dad was still alive, and he says that he hung around to, like, don't know how he explains it. It's not like watch after his dad or, I guess, just hang out with his dad, because his dad was trying to invent this machine that would make him alive again.
Lazarus.
So I guess he had to stay. He had to not cross over to give his dad hope. But I wonder why. And I guess maybe he, like, I wonder if, like, Casper, in hanging around to try to give his dad hope, he started to have hope that he could be a real boy again one day. And he could be, because he was in this movie. Like, he knew the machine was still there, too. So maybe that's why he didn't cross over. Like, he was just waiting and waiting and waiting.
And let's point out the craziest thing of all is that this Lazarus machine works.
It does. And he selflessly uses it to bring Bill Pullman back alive when Bill Pullman dies.
Which, why is there an open manhole cover right outside of the bar?
Wait, where is that?
He's at the bar.
Oh, at a bar.
He's getting trashed at the bar and doing drunk karaoke, and the ghosts are all going to kill him, and they're like, we can't kill him, he loves his daughter. And then he walks out the front door of the bar, ostensibly, and there's just like a sign that says, like, open hole or whatever, and he just falls in and dies.
Yeah, that's...
like, three steps outside of a door. It's, like, in a movie filled with ghosts and reincarnation and all sorts of nonsense, that's the most unbelievable part.
That's what I, like, it was so shocking to me. I didn't remember that happened, and it was so shocking when that happened.
The ghosts are trying to kill him because they think he's a good hang and they want to hang out forever, right? Like, that's why they're trying to kill him. That's weird too.
Well, because they're tired, I guess. I mean, we don't know what their unfinished business is either, but I think they're just tired of being the three of them, and they're like, we want to turn this trio into a quartet, so let's kill this guy who we've known for 2 days, because, like, we'll want to hang out with him forever. It's all strange, but it's also a movie that's only 90 minutes long. Like, there's not a lot of time to explain things or really develop reasons why. Which, when you're
Joey,
7 years old and
Joey,
watching this, it's
wait,
totally
wait,
fine.
Wait, Joey. Most movies are only 90 minutes long, and they they do a pretty good job at explaining things.
Look, I love Casper.
I know. It's a kid's movie. It doesn't matter, because it's a kid's movie. They didn't have to do a good job.
One thing that I really liked, and this is such a minor detail, is that the mom, Christina Ricci's mom, Amelia Harvey, played by Amy Brenneman, is the mom on The Leftovers. And so in this movie, she's last name Harvey, and in that show, she's last name Garvey. So I was like, that's very, very similar for the only two things I might have ever seen this woman in.
I think she's also married to the director.
Is she?
I think so, yeah.
Let me see.
When I went to look it up on Wikipedia, I had already clicked on her because I had done it before when we watched City of Angels.
She is married to Brad Silberling. Oh, she got married in 1995. I wonder if they met on set of Casper.
I hope so.
Or maybe they got married on the set of Casper. How spooky.
Ghostly love story for the ages.
So there was a couple of things in this movie that, for me, really didn't belong in this movie, and I want to know if you guys picked up on that, too. The first is that I'm pretty sure there was a dick joke in this movie.
Yep. In the vacuum cleaner, right?
Yes! And I didn't...
That's not my nose, or that's not my finger, or whatever?
He has a really pointy head, that one ghost. And one of the ghosts says, like, hey, is that your head? And he goes, that's not my head.
Yep.
Like, that's not why.
I didn't hear it
the first time. My roommate was like, wait, was that a dick joke? And I was like, do we have to rewind this? And she was like, yes.
So I think there's a few different things it could have been. It's right after Bill Pullman takes the vacuum cleaner and sucks up the three ghosts into the vacuum cleaner. And they're all trying to fight their way out. And I think one says something like, you know, your head's on my butt, or poking me in the butt. And he says, that's not my head. And it's, like, it could be any number of things, but it's probably a dick joke.
Was that just, like, an improv? Like, they were just, like, messing around, like, making the dialogue for Inside the Vacuum Cleaner, and they left that in? Like, I can't imagine someone, do you think someone wrote that?
I don't know.
Maybe J.J. Abrams did.
I don't, because, like, kids aren't going to know what that means, and they're still going to think it's funny. And then adults who pay attention are going to think it's funny because, like, I can't believe that's in a PG movie. I think it works.
It was, it's, I liked it, obviously, but it was, it seemed a little off to me. The other thing that I thought was weird was that Kerrigan says bitch 2 times. Like, why?
Yes.
Like, why? Why does she have to say that? Like, this is, it's a, it just, like, seemed so off to me.
Well, she says it twice, and the guy who's from Monty Python calls her a bitch and says, I'm going to get a bitch just like you're a bitch at the very end. Like, they use it a few times. Like,
it's only at the end, though. Like, this, like, I really think this movie starts to go off the rails, like, 3/4 in.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Like, everything just kind of starts to fall apart.
I just, it was so weird to me that all of a sudden they were, like, using bad language. And she also smokes a cigarette earlier, which is, like, something that was fine in 1995, but that you can't really, I don't think you can do that in a kid's movie anymore.
No, definitely not. And if, I mean, like, maybe you can, but it's pretty extremely rare. Even, like, for non-kids movies, it's extremely rare to see somebody smoking on screen these days.
Well, I think you need to, like, have a reason to do it. Mm-hmm. And here it's just because she wants to smoke a cigarette. Like, that's not really a good reason.
She's just, like, standing angry, and so she smokes a cigarette. Like, the only other example I could think of where, like somebody smokes a cigarette in a kid's movie, like a live-action kid's movie, is, like, Cruella de Vil smokes cigarettes. Mm-hmm. But that's, like, it's so stylized, you know? Like, it's hardly even, yeah.
We just watched Constantine for Keanu Club, and he's smoking cigarettes there, too, but that's rated R. Like, it's still shocking when you have, like, a disgruntled, you know, down-on-his-luck exorcist or whatever Constantine's job is, and even in an R-rated movie, it's still off, like, not off-putting, but, like, it catches you off guard when somebody's smoking cigarettes. Like, we've done this really crazy societal, like, we're removing cigarettes from everywhere, like in movies and in restaurants and everything. Like, they still exist. You still see people smoking all the time, but it still feels weird to see someone smoke when they're smoking in a place that they're not supposed to.
Or, like, at all on script. I remember when I was in art school, I took, like, a politics and the media class, and we watched All the President's Men, and there's, like, never a frame of the movie where somebody isn't smoking. And it was so surprising to see that, like, they walk right into an elevator with cigarettes and, like, all of these things that used to be, like, super commonplace, that now to watch them in the 21st century seems, like, just bananas.
Us 90 kids, we got, like, so well trained to be like, no cigarettes, no drugs.
Well, now I think it's actually, like, way more, like, it's way more normal and way more common to see people, like, smoking weed on screen than it is to see people smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Very weird. I never thought about that. That's very weird.
There was also in this movie, like, I think one of the best, like, dad-daughter exchanges. It happened when, like, first of all, I think part of what's so cool about Christina Ricci's character in this is that she's so honest with her dad. Like, she doesn't hide anything from him. She's, like, obviously a good kid. It's not like she has anything to hide, really, but it's just, that seems so rare. Like, I certainly didn't have that relationship with my dad.
Well, I think in this movie, like, her dad is so kind of overcome by grief that she winds up being the parent a lot of times. Like, did you guys see that? But that, yeah. Like, she has to, like, step in and be an adult, at least emotionally more adult than her father is.
Yeah, like, she's mad at him because they're always moving around, and, like, she has to go to all these different schools, and she's basically like, can you just get your shit together and let us stay in one place, please?
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, my favorite exchange between them is when she's like, Dad, I found your credit card. And he's so absent-minded, I guess, that he's just like, oh, where? And she says, in your wallet. And then that little, like, back and forth about, you know, I want to look date nice. Like, that's how, like, honest she is. Like, that is great and sweet, and I love that. But it's just, like, he's such a mess. You're right. Like, he's such a mess all the time. And it feels like he almost shouldn't be working at all. but I don't know what he would be doing otherwise. I also, like, how much is he getting paid for this job?
I don't think he is. I think it's just the house. They get to live in the house for free.
So he had to drive cross country to just, like, for free room and board?
I don't know. Money isn't really a thing in this movie except for Kerrigan wants all the money. Like,
that's true. Did you guys think, as ladies, that Christina Ricci's dress at the end was way too big for her?
I don't know.
Yeah, wasn't that cute?
I have to look it up real quick.
So Casper, so she sets up that room for Casper with his trains and all of his toys and everything. And then he's like, come with me. And they go to the attic and he pulls out his mom's, I guess, wedding dress maybe?
Yeah, that's definitely a wedding dress.
And he puts it over her and it's gigantic. And then she pulls the sort of like belty lace thing or whatever and ties it around. And so it's sort of form fitting for like her waist down, but like, she could have linebacker shoulders and fit in that dress, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is where, like, for me, the movie got kind of Tim Burton-y anyway, but it really felt like that scene in Beetlejuice where Winona Ryder has the wedding dress on. Mm. But it was, I felt that also, like, it wasn't flattering on her, and she was, like, she said she wanted to look nice, but I would just, like, kind of wrote it off as it being Halloween, and it was like, whatever, it's Halloween.
Right, when I remembered what kind of party they were having, I was like, oh, I guess that, you know, sort of makes, like, she could be a dead ghost bride or something, that it sort of works. Can we also talk about how the teacher volunteers to have a party?
Oh my god, I took notes about the teacher every time he was on the screen, because he was so, like, he was so weird.
It's all very, very strange. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I haven't thrown a lot of parties. I feel like I never want to throw a party. Like, I want to go to one where I don't have to do the work.
Yeah.
And here, Christina Ricci and that bratty girl are both, like, sort of, in a way, fighting over who throws the party. Like, that girl's like, I want it to be at my house. And, you know, all, like, whatever, at my parents, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, why do you want to do all that work? Just, like, be in the really creepy big house. And just enjoy it. Like, trash the place if you want, which they kind of do, but then the movie ends.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, like, at least for the mean girl, it's like a power play, kind of, to have everyone coming to her home and be on, like, her home territory and set it up in, like, just the right way. Whereas Christina Ricci is just trying to fit in and, like, trying to get people to like her and be her friend. And, like, what better way to do that than, like, inviting your whole class over for a giant party in your cool old creepy house?
But in the end, like, Christina Ricci wins and gets to have the party, not because she actually wins, but because, like, they all think the house is haunted. So they all want to go there. Which mm-hmm. I actually, like, thinking back on it, like, maybe that's why the weird teacher was so excited to go, because, like, he wanted to see too. He was the only adult at this party that he did not that he didn't have to chaperone. Like, he just went just for fun.
Yeah,
he went in costume just to have a good time with, like, I don't know, hundreds of kids.
All 100 kids from her class.
I thought it was just like a party for their class, but it seems like a party for the whole school.
I don't know. This is, like, the movie didn't go off the rails a little bit. Like, the house also got magically decorated the moment they all walked in. Like, logic,
well,
really
maybe
ran
not
out the window.
Magically decorated. The ghosts might have decorated it when we
the uncles?
Yeah, why not?
So here's a question for you two, getting it back to the central theme of this podcast. As people who saw this when you were younger and probably liked it but didn't have it, like, in your heart as this was one of your favorite movies as a kid, are you able to overlook this kind of plot inconsistency and, like, lack of logic and follow through? And sort of, are you able to, like, brush it off as, like, oh, it's just a kid's movie? Or does this kind of stuff bother you and really kind of hinder your enjoyment of watching this movie again?
I don't know. It probably would depend on the day for me. Like, sometimes that sort of stuff bothers me, and then other times it doesn't, and then it depends on the movie and, like, how much, like, how the balance is of, like, inconsistency and kind of just not holding together very well versus, you know, maybe it looks really cool or it's really entertaining in this other way. I was actually kind of bored watching most of the movie I actually enjoyed the end part more than like the first three quarters. Like once it starts getting extra weird is like when I kind of lock in and I'm like, yes.
I agree. I really liked that. It dragged for me like in the middle.
Yeah.
But I don't think I can look at it that like the way you are asking, Joey, because I do like have so many thoughts and feelings going into it about Christina Ricci and about Devon Sawa and about like my experience watching this movie as a kid, even if I couldn't remember having seen it. But I really liked it. Like, I mean, I already said, like, I laughed out loud more than once. Thinking about it, that like, so I feel like I was talking earlier about how this, like, kind of, like, I was looking up to Christina Ricci and, like, you know, when the Devon Sawa character, like, he was so cute when I was 9 in 1995. You know, like, every girl was in love with him because he was also in Little Giants that year. And he was really cute in that, too. And, but this, like, idea, like, she's really strong and powerful this whole movie. Like, I think she behaves in a way that, like, would be really good for a young girl to look up to. Mm. But then at the end, it's still, like, this guy who's not even a real guy who comes and saves her, you know, like...
And, like, puts her in a wedding dress.
Yeah, like...
And isolates her from the rest of the class. Actually, I think Casper might be an abusive boyfriend.
Well, that's... and that's the thing. That's what I'm getting at. Is, like, so... This is what we learned, was, like, you sit in the corner and you wait for the guy to come get you.
The not real guy who's only going to be like a human boy for 10 minutes.
The guy who's only going to be alive for 10 minutes and then he's going to abandon you forever. Like, so for all the really good, like, messages I think this movie sends, that message is, like, really, really horrible. And I actually think I personally am still trying to recover from that message being thrown at me over and over and over again for my whole life.
Girl, we all are.
We are, right?
Yeah.
Like, so they tried, but they still really broke us a little bit by having it end that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to lay all of this at the feet of Casper. it's not like it's just Casper. I think the majority of the movie, Christina Ricci's character is, like, you know, strong, like you were saying. The biggest frustration for me actually watching it as an adult and like an adult who's obsessed with death is that this could have been a really effective and important and emotional tool for talking about grief. And it just doesn't really do that. Like, you have these characters who, or at least Bill Pullman is like so steeped in his grief over losing his wife and the daughter who has lost a mother and like all of this stuff. I like it's almost there, but again, like doesn't like stick the landing on talking about grief. And the fact that it actually addresses child death, I think is a really big deal. And is like another opportunity to, you know, talk about these issues that our like death phobic culture is so obsessed with shying away from. It's all here in this movie, but they don't really do much with it.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. And, like, hearing you say that, along with, like, some of the other things that we've talked about, like, I think that makes me think this movie is, like, a pretty mediocre movie that could have really been something.
Yeah.
Although it was successful.
It was successful. And the haunted mansion, that like hall that they have the party in at the end of the movie, same place they filmed the Backstreet Boys video for Everybody.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
I could see
like,
it.
Spiral floor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So one of the other reasons I wanted to start this podcast was because of a Backstreet Boys song that I reheard and like listened to the lyrics and could not believe. Like, God, okay, hold on. I have to think of what song it is so that this will make sense.
Well, while you think of that, I think this is a nice podcast that kind of blends together the two different things that the Cage Club Podcast Network does. Like, with the Sandra Bullock thing, when we get to that, when you get to that, I say we, but I'm not really involved in that. When you get to that, it's going to be like what we sort of started with Cage and Keanu and Zac Efron and stuff. But now we have Now and Again, which goes back and looks at the Now That's What They Call Music and sort of talks about where they were when, because it seems like all the guests are kind of around the same age. Mm-hmm. So they're all sort of in middle school when those discs started coming out. And so this is kind of this beautiful, perfect blend of like filmography and nostalgia. And it's an honest look back at like what holds up and what doesn't. And, you know, it's kind of scary in how, I guess, personal it can be.
Yeah.
I'm also really interested in having people who are not our age on this podcast. Because I think to go back and have, you know, maybe, for example, someone who's like my mom's age look at...
Or just like your mom in general, just have her on.
Yeah, I'm probably totally going to have my mom on. But, you know, to have her go back and look at something and then hear her talk about it. And also for me to then also experience that thing, what I assume will be the first time. Just like, I'm curious to see. I mean, I think we've already established how easy it is to like something that wasn't good just because you saw it when you were young. So I'm really curious to like see something for the first time that somebody else really, really loves for whatever reason.
That's what I think is going to be most interesting. And I think that there's going to be a mixture of like good and bad. Like if people have this, you know, fondness or something that's genuinely good, or, you know, maybe made for adults, like maybe the first grown-up movie they saw, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. But like last year or 2 years ago, I saw A Christmas Story for the first time. And I was like, this is a movie that I should have watched when I was little, because I can't get into it as an adult. Like, it just, there's no nostalgia there for me. So it's going to be interesting if you guys, I think it's going to be interesting if you have somebody on who loves a kid's movie, say like Casper, but that you've never seen, and to look at it with fresh eyes as people, you know, 20 years older than the target demographic, like what that'll mean, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. All right, I found the Backstreet Boys song.
Oh, yeah, what
it's,
is it?
So it's As Long As You Love Me, which, like, you know, great song. Love this album when I was a kid. Like, knew every word to every song, listened to it over and over again. And I heard this song again on the radio, and it all of a sudden sounded to me like a song about a man falling in love with a woman who was a felon. And, like, because it goes, I don't care who you are, where you're from, what you did, as long as you love me. Like, it, like, and as the song goes on, it really, really starts to sound like this lady is trouble, but he just, like, saw her one time and now, like, can't get over it and is gonna follow her anywhere and do anything, which, like, sounded insane. I just never heard it sound like that before.
Yeah, I don't think you're actually supposed to, like, listen to song lyrics, especially not when it comes to, like, boy band lyrics. They're questionable.
No, but some, like I've listened to, like, NSYNC again since then, and the lyrics are stupid, but they make sense. Like, this didn't even make sense anymore. And, like, it blew my mind a little bit, because, like, it's weird to have something totally memorized, and, like, you could go on autopilot, you could sing it, and then to go, like, wait, what? I don't know. So, guys, anything else to add about Casper before we're done?
Let's see.
Bill Pullman would go on to be the president of the United States the next year.
And he's in Lost Highway. Like, that's the thing I couldn't get over the most is, like Lost Highway is one of my favorite movies. And he's, like, kind of scary in it. He's, like scary and, like, sometimes a little sexy and, like, really brooding and, like, completely, even though, like, I can see how he's the same guy, like, it's just the complete opposite of this, because he's so, like, he's warm in this, and yeah, mm-hmm. he's, like, a little bit out of it, but he really does seem really fatherly. So, like, I had never thought much about him as an actor before, and all of a sudden I was like,
whoa. So maybe
that
means he's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor, you guys. I don't know
if
you know.
I have a confession to make, which is that, like, up to half of us recording this, I definitely thought that he was Bill Paxton.
Yeah, I thought that last week also. Why aren't we
talking about how he just died? And then I had to, like, double check on IMDb. I'm not good with names.
I was talking to Joey last week, and I was, like, so excited. I was like, yeah, we get to do...
You were disappointed that Joel Pullman didn't die. I was disappointed
that it wasn't Bill Paxton.
Oh, well. Oh, boy.
You know, it's nice to be able to talk about something timely, although I'm glad Bill Pullman didn't die, and I'm very sorry for Bill Paxton that he did die.
Yeah.
Because who knows when this podcast will be released, but now at least you know when we're recording it.
Not to give it away or anything.
Well, like I said before, so, like, before they made this movie, there had been comics and cartoons and stuff dating back to the late 30s, and it was originally Casper the Friendly Ghost. And I just love this quote from the Wikipedia article. As his name indicates, he is a ghost, yet he is quite personable.
It's pretty wonderful.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, he was the first instance of a ghost in pop culture who was not scary? Like, he was nice? Like, had there never been a nice ghost before that?
I don't know. I haven't done much reading on ghosts in popular media. If we were talking about, like, the Grim Reaper and the Death Figure, I would have answers for that. But I don't have answers about ghosts. So I don't know. It's possible. Late 1930s. Maybe. I'm just trying to think about, like, what other spooky stuff was happening around that time, but I don't know. After the movie, there were two live-action direct-to-video follow-ups to the film, Casper, A Spirited Beginning, and Casper Meets Wendy, which introduced Hilary Duff. That was her first.
Oh, was she Wendy?
I guess so.
Oh.
And then there were also, those were followed by Casper's Haunted Christmas, which starred Spooky and Poyle from the animated series spinoff, of the first movie, and Casper's Scare School, which were done entirely in CGI with no live action elements. They are often referred to as being prequels to the 1995 feature film, despite the fact that they heartily contradict the feature and do not appear to even take place in the same universe.
When was... I'm asking Wikipedia now, but I wonder when the last Casper thing was made. Like how long did this go on for after this movie?
Oh, like a while.
All right, Joey, anything else to add about Casper?
Nope, I still like it. This is actually a movie that I own on I mean, I own a lot of movies, but I own this on DVD because a couple years ago when I was working at Best Buy, they were selling, I think it was Despicable Me had just come out or something, and they were selling, like, the stuffed Minions, and you could buy a Minion, or for the same price you could get a Minion and a DVD, and I was like, oh, I'll just take Casper. And I was like, I don't know if I'll ever watch Casper again, but, like, I want to own Casper. And then I finally was able to unwrap it and watch it for this. So thank you.
Oh, that is so exciting. I'm so glad we could help you with that.
I am too.
Well, I'm glad that it didn't, it wasn't ruined for you, your childhood memories.
It's going to be sort of a delightful train wreck when you have somebody on and, like, they hate something they used to love.
Yeah.
You made me want to watch Richie Rich again for sure now.
Well, he has a McDonald's in his house.
I loved that movie.
Well, maybe if this podcast goes on for on and on and on, I'll come back on and do Richie Rich.
In a few years, we'll watch Richie Rich.
Yes. Because that was my Macaulay Culkin movie, more so than Home Alone or Home Alone 2. It was Richie Rich, which I think
mine
is
too.
Weird.
No, it was mine too. Like, I watched Home Alone and Home Alone 2, but, like, I watched Richie Rich over and over and over. I loved that movie.
No, I was more of a Home Alone kid.
We all have our own Richie.
Well, you guys, thanks so much for joining us on our very first Wistful Thinking. In 2 weeks, we'll be talking with the other Cage Club co-founder, Mike Manzi, about the 1995 Sandra Bullock movie, The Net. We'll see you then.